Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 509. Thank you so much if you came out to WonderCon. Well, thanks if you came to WonderCon, and then thanks if you came to any of the Nerdist stuff at WonderCon. We did some panels. We did a really fun panel on Sunday. We did a Nerdist News panel on Saturday. We had a booth. There were signings. We shot stuff there, shows for the channel. It was all super, super amazing, and I think we're starting to get to a point where we're establishing some presences at cons that I feel like this is, we're finally getting there. So thank you so much if you came out and supported that. Our panel on Sunday was beyond fun. People actually showed up. I was worried that people are like, meh, but people actually showed up. So thank you for not saying meh. And if you did, I still love you. I'm going to be doing stand-up at a bunch of places, and we're going to be doing At Midnight on the Road. Go to Nerdist.com/calendar. Mid-May, we'll be in Nashville for the Wild West Comedy Festival. Then at the end of May, Wise Guys in Utah, right there in West Valley City. So going back there, I was there last year. And then Portland in June, and then Tacoma in September. So Nerdist.com/calendar, get tickets for all that business. I'd like to thank Audible.com for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Audible, if you've listened to an audiobook, there's a very good chance that it came from Audible. It is a leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the whole of the internet. They have over 150,000 titles. And listen, if you're in between podcasts and you're like, well, now I would like to hear someone read a story from start to finish that they probably wrote, then Audible is a good way to go. For instance, in honor of this guest on this episode, which I'm very excited about, you could say, hey, maybe I'll go listen to Up Till Now, the autobiography of William Shatner, read by William Shatner. Maybe I'll listen to Shatner Rules, Your Key to Understanding the Shatnerverse and the World at Large, read by William Shatner. Those are on audible.com. So here's your offer. Here's your Nerdist listener offer. You're going to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial today by signing up at audiblepodcast.com/nerdist. So you're not going to audible.com, you're going to audiblepodcast.com/nerdist. Again, that's for a free audiobook, a 30-day trial. Thanks to Audible for supporting the Nerdist Podcast. This episode is William Shatner, and I had no idea what to expect. I've never met Shatner before. I didn't know. And so I guess in my brain I thought, well, you know, I'll show up. He'll probably be cordial, but there'll probably be some air that he is aware that he is William Shatner. And I was so wrong. Not at all. William Shatner was so down-to-earth and wonderful and warm and had so many great stories. I'm just giving you a heads up. We really didn't talk about Star Trek because I figured he's probably talked about Star Trek enough. We talked about adulthood and responsibility and philosophy and sort of what makes people tick. And it was I was so blown away by the conversation with him. He was such a terrific guy. And afterwards, Jonah even said to me, like, holy shit, that was really, that was fascinating. And I also feel like it went pretty well because he hugged me afterwards, and it wasn't like an obligatory hug. It was like, it felt like a genuine, he had a really great time being there. So I've been super excited to put this one up. I hope you enjoy it as much as we enjoyed being a part of it. But I was really just trying to, I was mining him for knowledge and really trying to learn. I mean, Bill's 83, but the guy seems like he's in his 60s, so whatever you're doing, Bill, it's working. I hope it's okay I call you Bill. By the way, you should know that his one-man show, Shatner's World, is in select theaters April 24th. It's a special engagement, which will be shown in more than 630 theaters on Thursday, April 24th. And it's basically Shatner on stage that sort of walks through the story of his life and career. If you go to shatnersworld.com, you can get information about that. So here you go, the Nerdist Podcast number 509 with William Shatner.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Know that you've done your research.
That was in the bathroom.
Go get your cat from the back.
I hope you're cool.
Well, as long as it doesn't have any stimulants in it.
No. It's just straight meth, liquefied.
How did you get it?
it was brought by one of our staff.
That's beautiful.
I'm taking credit for something I had really nothing to do with. I walked it from there.
Somebody needs to take the credit because I appreciate it.
No, you're so welcome.
I appreciate it.
Finally, that credit.
I do. Yeah. Hey, it's really great to meet you. We've sort of tweeted back and forth a little bit, but never actually met in person.
You know, we were talking about the quality. Are we on?
We are on.
The qualities of tweeting and Facebook as against Instagram, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And Vine.
Yep.
And how what seems to be happening is that everybody's ability to concentrate is getting less and less.
Oh, yeah.
So now, instead of 148 characters, you focus on that, it's now to 6 seconds.
Yeah.
and the seconds. Instagram is one picture, right?
Yeah.
So there used to be a test. Fighter pilots would get a test. They'd flash the silhouette of the enemy fighter plane on a screen for an instant so that they were training their eyes to get a flash of the plane so they would recognize friend or foe. So it was an instant. It was like milliseconds. So is that what's going to happen on Instagram? You flash a picture, and then and that's the limit. And then you can't get any less than that, because after that, your mind is disintegrated.
Yeah. It's then after that, reality begins to turn in on itself. But kids can identify now how quickly if someone has a picture of their cat.
Right.
It's
the old fighter pilot thing. Flash it on, get it off,
and
train your minds to recognize instantly friend or foe, which is somebody in your next class.
I'm already scared of just the idea that, you know, that kids are training with, like iPads and tablets, and that their brains are already being trained.
Well, but
so much
not only is it being trained. From my own personal experience, last night,
mm-hmm.
I'm out with my daughter and a number of family members. One of my granddaughters, she's 8.
Okay,
and she's not interested in carrying on a conversation. What she wants is the iPhone to play a game.
Sure.
So already at 8 years old, they're being trained. Their mind is being trained not to have any relationship, but to go into the computer and find out what life is like out of the computer.
And the problem is that no one really knows what the long-term psychological effects to this are, because it's so new.
It's this year.
So we have no idea what this generation... I mean, some theories are that tomorrow's adults will be slightly less empathetic because they're not relating to people one-on-one.
Well, but you're conditioning that by saying slightly less. They have no empathy whatsoever. I mean, if you're saying... You know, I love you.
Yeah.
And you text, I love you.
Yeah.
There's a great poem. How do I love you? Let me count the ways.
Sure.
There are so many ways to say I love you.
Yeah.
But the only one way to text it.
ILU.
Exactly. You can even abbreviate.
Or a little heart emoticon.
Emoticon. Or then right after that, LOL. Because
I'm just kidding. I don't love you at all.
Right. and as quickly as that upturn emoticon is, you get the downturn emoticon. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all, kids. These goddamn kids.
No, but it isn't, right? I mean, who's listening to this program? A podcast.
Yeah.
You know, a short time ago, it was a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's a podcast.
Yeah.
Where you get it from a vendor like Apple.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that. And so what seems to be very common for you and the people who are listening is like, that's a whole new world out there. And I've got to get with it or not.
Sure.
And I have to get with it because I've got a message to deliver.
Yeah.
I've got to get the people who are listening to this podcast to tell them without writing it so that they get it in cold textual things, but in an emotional statement to say, if you want to have a good time, do this thing I'm planning.
Well, but you also embrace technology pretty quickly.
Absolutely, but the technology escapes you. It's like trying to grasp a mercury or whatever it is that squeezes out of you, whatever squeezes out of your hand. you can't grasp it. You no sooner say, oh, I got it, Twitter, and like, I'm Twittering.
Yeah.
It's Twitter's gone and something else is taking its place.
I was having this conversation with someone else recently about you know, like new social networks emerging, and but I think there was the boom in like 2003 to 2005 where people were just discovering what a social network was, and so there were a lot of them turning over quickly. But now I feel like people are so rooted in Facebook and Twitter that I do think eventually something will come along to replace it. But I do think that so many people are like us and go, ah, crap, I don't feel like starting all over again somewhere
else. But you got to start all over again. Look, some while ago, 5, 6, 7 years ago, I, whatever you call it, got the copyright for a title on a web title, whatever that's called.
Yeah.
I did an, what is it?
You did the DNS search? You did like the URL search, the domain
well,
search?
Well, I bought it.
You bought the domain.
I bought domain. There you go. I bought the domain to a site called My, I named it My Outer Space. And I was going to have science fiction blogs or whatever blogs were then, conversations, My Outer Space. So it dwindled along and it didn't go so well. And we got it up and it started out very well. It hasn't finished as well as I would like. The main reason, I think, is My Outer Space was really a good title. Because MySpace was very popular.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But now MySpace doesn't exist. So My Outer Space doesn't exist. And all it changes so rapidly.
Can I make a suggestion?
Please.
My Spacebook. Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. I like it.
No,
it took me a second.
Okay, sorry. Okay, well, then fine. That's not a good idea, Jonah.
Well, MySpacebook being my being a...
Basically just aping Facebook instead of MySpace.
Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, my Spacebook. Spacebook. Spacebook.
That's a really good idea.
Get rid of the mic.
By the time this is broadcast, have it.
You just bought it. Have you done podcasts before?
Well, I thought I was. There have been many conversations I've had with people who were typing on a computer, and people would ask questions, and I would answer questions based on the conversation on a computer. I thought that was called a blog.
Mm-hmm.
Or there were conversations with people that were writing, and you were, in effect, communicating with them, not on a microphone, and not sometime later where you purchase it from Apple, but it was like happening.
Yeah.
That, I thought, was what blogs are.
Yeah.
And then I find, coming here, that blogs, I try to grasp blogs.
Yeah.
And whatever it is that squeezes out of your hand, blogs are no longer blogs.
I think it's blogs. No, these audio podcasts are. So the problem is there was an explosion of blogs, and then at a certain point, I think normal people were just like, oh, I don't feel like having, you have to write this every day? What a pain in the ass. And that's why... You know, Twitter and status updates are called microblogging because you're essentially just spitting out short, which is much more manageable for people in
a
day.
So then let me understand you. Then the Twittering I do is a micro.
They call it microblogging. Yeah.
And this is a macro blog.
This technically could be a macro blog.
That's true.
Nanoblogging would just be. Yeah.
Right. Right. A sound that needs to be recognized.
That's it. That's all it is.
Right.
But I feel like your personality, I feel like you could host your own podcast because I really loved the Raw Nerve Show. Yeah, I thought that was a really cool show.
See, I love to talk to people and I love to find out about them. And that curiosity is really what conversation's all about. And that's what was Raw Nerve. And there was another show that lasted a short while called Aftermath. And that, too, was delving into people's psyche.
Mm-hmm.
Aftermath was some event that happened 3, 4, or 5 years ago that was in the newspapers and in the news. Everyone, what was that? And now, what was the aftermath? What's happened since then when it's all passed?
Yeah.
Not a novel idea, but in my hands, I went into famous cases and got the people on camera and talked to them long enough so that they, either out of fatigue or empathy, they broke down and there were things that were said that were enormous.
Yeah.
And the same thing on, and thank you for bringing it up,
Ron Herb.
Yeah.
I would have these conversations, which we could edit down to 22 minutes, but it might have taken an hour. And it was fascinating to find out what was in somebody's mind who either was unknown or was a celebrity. And in one case, came back to me and said, listen, I told you a story. I don't want you to use it. And I didn't use it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
What was the story?
Yeah, exactly. So, and let me tell you the story.
They said they didn't want it on Ron Irving.
Couldn't say anything about the podcast, though.
But a guy said, don't use it. And I said, okay. I mean, I understood that. And the reason I was able to get such interesting answers was because they knew that I wasn't out to get that story.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what most everybody else would want. Oh, I got that story.
Well, yeah, because the one that I remember, and then I saw a video of you talking about it afterwards, was you said you've had a million conversations with Leonard Nimoy, and he told one story that you'd never heard before, exactly. And you were completely blown away. You're
exactly.
Like, how have I never heard this
and
story?
And that story was, exactly, his grandfather was a leather worker, and every time Leonard came home to Boston from being out in the wilds of Los Angeles and company, he'd come home and his grandfather sitting beside him, his grandfather's hands would go to his shoes and he would feel the leather and see whether the soles were good or the heels were worn, and he'd know whether Leonard was doing well or not.
Oh, wow.
Is that a great story?
That's really cool.
And Leonard said, I haven't thought of that since it happened.
I mean, you must feel at this point just having sat in the interviewee chair as many times as you have that... I mean, have you pretty much told everything that's in your head at this point a million times?
No. See, now I'm going to take that as my cue.
Okay.
There's a whole new thing is happening. When was the last time you were able to use the word unique? Long time.
Yeah.
Okay. So a unique event is going to happen on April 24th. And I asked the people who are putting it on, Fathom Events, whether I could use the word unique. Is this unique? Yes, this is unique. So on April 24th, at movie theaters all across the country, so whoever's listening to this, I'm sure there is one or many movie theaters that are going to have this one-man show that I did on Broadway and I did on tour for the last couple of years, is a movie. I had it filmed. I filmed it at a matinee and evening performance one day. And it is now essentially that live performance at a movie theater somewhere near your neighborhood. It's called Shatner's World.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get to find out how to buy tickets at shatnersworldcinema.com. As simple as that. So all this is, to me, an event. I mean, and unique event. First of all, it's a movie of the one-man show, which got great critical acclaim. It's a web of words that engages you in laughter and in tears and joy and hate and music and motorcycles. And it goes on, horses and love. You know, it just goes on. It's a terrific evening in the theater. And it'll be at your movie theater. In addition to that, I'm doing publicity in areas that I've rarely visited before, for example, right here, doing a blog to tell people that this event is happening, because one half of the job is doing the performance.
Sure.
And the other half, as we all know in show business, but many people in the hinterlands don't know, the other half is getting you folks out there to know that this event is happening, and you should go see it because it'll be a terrific evening's entertainment for a very reasonable price.
Do you enjoy this part of? I mean, in the pre-internet days, essentially a studio or a large machine would say, "Well, Bill, here's this thing. We did this thing, and now here are all the places you're going to go." And now you basically are in charge of all of that, essentially, right? You are sort of the master of that domain now. Do you like that role?
That's exactly right. In not so long ago time, and it still happens, I'm seeing some of these big blockbuster movies with the crew, the cast going out and doing all the talk shows and saying this is what's happening. In my mind, there is a question as to how much good that really does, because you'll find big stars going out and the movie fails, and then you'll go find a movie that really makes a sensation and nobody's gone out.
Right.
So there used to be a thought that there was a scent, a smell of a hit, and why that would be the case, nobody could tell. And vast amounts of publicity really didn't make a great deal of difference. But there's reason to think that a blog like this reaches more people on a personal basis than all the talk shows and the things that people are doing, the tabloid things that people are doing, that this may be more effective. This is a more personal way. And in the same way with Twittering, I have a lot of people following me. To Twitter that message is to say, hey, this is coming from my heart. Something really good is happening. You may like it. I wish you would take a look.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the quality of the podcast listener is probably a little bit more engaged than just someone who's just flipping channels and catches a talk show. Oh, yeah. You know, there's not really... But, you know, this is a very intimate form. Like, I listen to podcasts, you listen to podcasts, you put it in your ear. It follows you around throughout the day. You form a connection to it. I think that's what it
See,
is.
See, that's so interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, I'm thinking somebody's listening through the radio, but they're not. They've plugged their ears
into their head.
Into their head.
We're part
let
of the Matrix.
Let me tell you a story about that very intimate fact. And I never saw it before. I mean, I'm coming to all this technology. I'm supposed to be a technologist, and I really am. But to see it insightfully. So I'm shooting a movie. The start of it is I have a iPod,
mm-hmm.
and I want to fill it with music. I know this is illegal, but I did it a long time ago. So I've served
statute of limitations, sir. You're good. Yeah.
So somebody said, I said, I don't have the music. They said, oh, I've got 4,000 songs. I'll download it into your iPod. Okay, so they downloaded their 4,000 song. Didn't occur to me at the time, but I now have this person's musical soul
mm-hmm.
in that I'm making my soul.
You can judge
this
them.
Is now my music.
That's right.
Okay, so now I'm shooting late at night. I'm in Las Vegas shooting at night film. And there's something about shooting at night that is very lonely and very isolated in that things move more slowly at night. The crew is tired. The cast is tired. Everything, it moves. So you're certain actors can get a dressing room, and so you're alone in your dressing room. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, okay? And I'm all alone. I got to stay awake because I'm going to be called. I don't know when. I can't fall asleep. So I plug this iPod in of an unknown music, and I'm flipping through it, and I see the White Album. The Beatles' mm-hmm. White Album. And I never... The Beatles were sort of, to me, simplistic. You know, I got it, but... Hey, Jude, hey, Jude, hey, Jude. Okay. What the heck? Okay, and I try to write songs, and I'm thinking, hey, Jude, I could write that. Okay. Okay, so now I plug in the White Album. And the sound is in my head. It's being riveted into my head, the White Album.
Yeah.
And I hear the little tinkles and the incidental pieces of orchestration that I never heard before. And suddenly I'm saying, hey, wait a minute. The Beatles, I get it. And this is like last year. You guys check out these Beatles? Pretty good.
Exactly.
They suck, they're actually so all right.
Now I suddenly get... The podcast, the two ends of the earphones are like equidistant from the center of your brain.
That's right.
So, excuse the word beaming,
yeah.
But it's beaming into the center of your brain,
sure.
And radiating out into all your synapses.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So you're flooded with this thing.
It's like you're there.
But you're more than there. You're in there.
Ah. Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad. I'm so glad that the iPod turned you around on the Beatles. So in the 60s, what would have been Shatner's playlist then? What would you have listened? What instead of the Beatles, you're like, the Beatles, what would you listen to?
I was into jazz, the great jazz. I was into Sinatra.
Yeah.
You know, all the... I didn't have esoteric music tastes. I wasn't brought up in a house with music, but I've always admired the trained voice. And I tried for a while doing operatic exercises. I was with a singing teacher for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
I regret not sticking with it, but I got too busy and I couldn't get. I wanted to play the guitar, and as the guitar and singing, that seemed to me to be like nirvana.
Yeah.
But I never achieved it. So I tried to get to it since I knew the musicality of words and the rhythm of words, I tried to get to it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that the melody playing behind me and my playing counter...
Like Rocket Man.
Yeah.
Well, Rocket Man was an accident. You know, it wasn't supposed to be. I didn't do that with enough forethought. That wasn't supposed to be broadcast. That was like at a closed...
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
No. It was done... There was an award for something.
Yeah.
Some science fiction award.
Yeah.
They asked me to sing that song. So I thought, Rocket Man.
Yeah.
And then there was a third interpretation of that. So there was three ways of doing it. So I tried all three ways, you know, and then I did Sinatra with the... But I was just playing it up for an enclosed audience. And all of a sudden, it's out there. It wasn't supposed to be broadcast.
One of the first viral hits, you might say.
Absolutely. Had I been able to do it, had I given it more thought and more, you know, had I tried for more excellence... I would have done it a little differently.
But then you did it with when Ben Folds produced your album.
Then I did it with deliberation.
Yeah, that's a great album. I was just like, before I even knew you were going to be on this show, I was listening to that record last week.
Okay,
yeah.
So then I got a chance to do it again. Okay, and then I did it with some artistry, if you will. But I got to music with people like Ben Folds and Billy Sherwood on the album that's out there now called Ponder the Mystery.
Mm-hmm.
I got to music through the back door and became... I appreciated symphonic music and great jazz. I'd go to see that. And Sinatra with his sense of timing and his sophistication always intrigued me. But rock and roll, I never got until I did rock and roll. And then I said, wait a minute. Rock and roll is energy. Rock and roll is this.
Yeah.
This has rock and roll.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. I just thought, wow, that's loud. You know, when I was listening to Sinatra and rock and roll came in, I thought, wow, I don't want to hear that. That's ugly. Until I began to understand it. And I went through a transition, I guess, that is an interesting part of allowing yourself to be malleable, and it's exactly what we're talking about technology. It also applies to anything, including music. Changing your tastes in music. Allowing yourself to at least be curious about what is that kid listening to and why. Rap. rap. What? But if you get into rap, which I did.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you like?
No, it isn't that. I did a rap number with a rapper. Are you...
Kyle, do you know? You know everything about everything.
I did a rap on Shakespeare. Mark Anthony's speech. Okay? Lend me your ears. No Tears for Caesar was the name of the song. And a rapper... I'm trying to remember his name. Some years ago, we wrote the song together. He said, he said to me in a darkened room with everybody puffing away, okay, in a typical studio adventure that I'd never been in, start to write a rap song about Julius Caesar and Mark Antony over a Shakespeare play.
Wow.
But I was doing a movie and we needed a song. And that was the song.
Oh, wow.
Was it
No
fun?
Tears for Caesar. It was hysterical. Because this was the kid who was writing it turned out to be like a great poet. I mean, there was poetry in what he was choosing his words with the exactness of a poet. The kind of thing that I think of myself, like words, are the medium that a painter might use
in colors.
Sure.
You choose the exact, if you can, the exact right word which explains implicitly what it is you're trying to convey. So that if the Eskimos have 13 words for snow, that they choose out of those 13 words the exact description of what the snow is like today.
Yeah.
And that's what poets should be doing with the English language. And apropos of April 24th, Shatner's World at movie theaters, I tried to select in the whole hour and a half to 2 hours the exact right word to convey the meaning.
Go ahead, sorry.
You know, I'm just saying, this rap artist, whom you would sort of discount as a poet, was a poet. Mm-hmm. And so these guys are. And you just have to get into the... Not only do you have to get into the music, but you have to get into their flow, their emotional background, so that you understand where they're coming from and what the words mean to them.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a very important lesson for people, because I already am very closed off to new, like, oh, I don't want to listen to that new. I like what I like already, because I think that's when people start to just wither. It's like they just kind of sort of hold on to a time period, and then they don't want
to. The way they cut their hair, the way they dress.
Yeah.
It's all old fashioned. You see women with the same, you can tell what era they're from by the style of their hair many times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, were you always that way, or no, you weren't.
No, it's almost, you have to force feed yourself. You have to say, wait a minute. If that, and usually young people who are in the forefront of change, whether it's schooling or music or different kinds of plays or movies for that matter, anything that jostles the human psyche, it's usually the young people who are in the forefront. Mm-hmm. They're leading the revolution, whether it's political or cultural. Because they want change. And change is what is normal and what, strangely enough, we all resist.
Maybe that's part of our... Maybe that's a biological imperative that gets us out of the way so that the young people can inherit.
But that's exactly right. The kids are... That's why we came out of the tree. You can't imagine some old guy with a bad back climbing out of the tree. I'm here. I'm happy here. I'm staying in. I got a bow. I'm not moving. And this young kid with a short tail is jumping down off the tree. Hey, look at me. I'm running in the savannah.
Get off my tree lawn.
Exactly. But that's exactly right. And that is the imperative. Get out of the way, you who are over 20 or 25, because you're dead. You no longer can have children, healthy children. I'm the next, 13, 14 years old. I'm due for the children. The racial imperative is I'm due to be pregnant.
Yeah.
And this young guy is going to make me pregnant.
Yeah.
And anybody over 25 is dead. And those of us over 25 say, wait a minute.
What was that
about the Beatles?
Exactly. Well, when you're young, you say a lot of ignorant things like, by the time I'm 30, it's over. Yeah, and then you get to 30 and you're like, wait.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that bad.
Exactly.
It's not that bad.
That's exactly right.
But you give me hope because, you've had many iterations of career and things that you've done and things that you've tried and this is the last couple years of my life is the first time that I've ever said like, yeah, there's an end point. It's not just this.
How old are you?
42. So it's not this, endless, like eventually there is but then I get to look to people like you and go, yeah, but Shatner's been, there were some things you didn't even start until you were like 60 years old. So it makes me feel better. It makes me feel a lot better.
Where do I find comfort?
You find comfort in the fact that you're William fucking Shatner. And you will not die, and you cannot be killed by conventional means.
I cannot die. No. I've got too much to do.
Where do I find comfort?
What did George Burns? What did George Burns say? Yeah. I can't die. I'm booked.
Yeah,
I
can't die.
I know. And that guy smoked cigars every day and ate red meat every day and drank, you know, like...
He lived.
Yeah. He lived forever.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is it that you like about... Because you said earlier, you said, I really like talking to people. I really like uncovering stories. So where, when you're in the process of doing that, like, what is it that sort of activates your brain to uncover stuff about people?
Well, it's the truth. It's the truth of what you are. You and I don't know each other. We're sitting across at a microphone. I just met you just now.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got keys in front of you.
Yep.
What are they keys to?
This is a car.
Is it a good car?
House.
You like your car?
It's a snazzy car. Yeah.
It's a snazzy car. Did you save up to buy? I mean, is it like? Was there some sacrifice involved in getting the car?
No.
Was it pure luxury? Are you making a great deal of money and you can
pure
afford
luxury,
the car?
Yes, but it was sort of that. I find that it isn't so much about having the car, but just that moment of I've worked all these years, and there was a time where. I got this thing, and the thing itself, the acquisition of the thing, wasn't really the most important factor. It was just the fact that it sort of, I got to say, like, oh, I've worked really hard, and now I can, without blinking, just treat myself to this thing.
Reward yourself.
And I'm not really that precious about the car. It's a fucking car. Like, it's, you know, whatever. I don't care. If a safe fell on it, I'd be like, well, it's a car. I don't care.
But it's what it represents.
I think it just sort of represents, you know, that... I worked for years and years and years and years and years, and then finally, you know.
Okay,
this is
so you used that phrase several times.
Yeah,
you've used the phrase. I've worked years and years
yes,
and years,
yes, yes,
and
yes.
I've got myself rewarded.
Yes.
So therein lies the story, which we can either go into or not. But this is the. I asked you about the car, but what's really revealed is the sense that you've sacrificed
sure.
a great deal, and you've rewarded yourself. Not rewarded yourself with love or a relationship, right? Okay. So there you see the insight into raw nerve.
Well, but
we go to raw nerve right there, which we could do, but we're on a different block.
Senator, one moment, Senator. I would like to... you asked about the car. I guess I could have said, well, this is the key to my girlfriend's apartment. I did mention the...
But you didn't, and that's significant.
This is why you should have a podcast. You would crush it. You would crush it with a podcast. That's fantastic. And so, I know it's always fun to have people on that you don't know, or maybe people you know, and then there was a whole other side of them that you didn't understand. I love when people talk about what they're excited about.
Well, you see, we all laughed because there was a truth in what I observed.
Yeah.
Right? And I saw the truth, too, and you did. We all recognized the truth. So out of that came laughter, but really interesting laughter. That was a laughter of, wow, that was the truth. A chord, a musical chord in our being was hit mm-hmm. in that moment, evoked laughter,
yeah.
which was the music of our soul,
yep.
right? So, because a truth was hit. A poetic truth was hit right in this little moment. I loved that. That made me... To hear you guys laugh made me so happy.
Oh, good.
Okay? So I was with you in the laughter.
Yeah.
And that's like everything.
My girlfriend's going to be upset, but this was great. were you always funny, or did you develop a sense of humor over time?
Well, I think I probably was funny. I always liked to make people laugh. It's making people laugh is both intuitive and learned. I saw my granddaughter, the same one who was fiddling with the phone, try and get into the comedic situation. Let me see if I can remember. It was the idea of the amusing moment we were telling her was I was serious, and then suddenly turned not serious.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it was that abrupt change that is amusing from time to time. So she said, "Oh, you mean yeah?" And then I was she was trying to do the comedy moment, but she didn't have it. She understood the principles involved,
right?
But she didn't.
She understood the tonal shift,
exactly.
Yeah.
But she couldn't do it because she's 8 years old,
right?
Or she hadn't seen it before. So once she, because she's a very intellectual young lady, once she saw the principles involved, there'll become a time when she'll be able to do it. So it'll be a learned comedic response.
Oh, yeah.
But in order to grasp the comedy, she intellectually grasped it. She wasn't technically able to do it, but she can learn to do that. So maybe that's what happened to me. I understood the comedic principles involved intuitively, and then it just takes time to hone that. So to tell a joke and get the timing, get the or in conversation to somehow you don't even think of it because you haven't got time to think. It's out of your mouth before you can think about it.
Yeah.
And that's honed, I think. I think a stand-up comic who works, and which is why the guys doing talk shows at night are all still going out doing stand-up, because the wit is honed. It's there. Not only do you have standard responses, but somehow the rapier of your wit is sharpened by doing it.
Yeah.
So if I'm in a podcast, if I'm doing this today and something else tomorrow, my brain is working at a little different level than my granddaughter's.
Of course. Yeah. Do you, if you've talked about this a million times, I apologize, but I have to ask you about it. But Twilight Zone is one of my favorite shows of all time. Can you just give me a taste of what that was like to work on that production? What was the production like? What was Rod Serling like? I have no background about any of it.
I just did a symposium with Rod Serling's daughter, who's written a book, apparently. I haven't read it, on her father. And I was asking her more about her father than she was asking me about my relationship.
Because he was, from what I understand, he was kind of a cold...
He was removed, totally.
Yeah.
And I had worked with him in live television. I had worked with him in some of the live television shows that he and he's dead now, but I'll think of it in a second. So there was a whole coterie of people led by Rod Serling, who produced and wrote, who did a lot of the latter day live television, which then everybody went from New York to Los Angeles and started to do film. People like writers like Richard Matheson and that whole group of science fiction writers that begat all kinds of wonderful hits. So Rod Serling was in the middle of that, and he was the focal point of all that. But actors didn't really get to see him, so I didn't know him very well. I had met him earlier on the live television, went to Los Angeles to do those two shows, didn't see much of him, have no real memory of him. But speaking to his daughter, I find out he was a paratrooper. Did you know that?
I did know that, actually. Yeah, I saw a little biography on him, and because I knew nothing about him.
I knew not.
Yeah.
And he was very funny. He was a great father. He took his kids out, or certainly his daughter out, on fun. Her memory of her father is not of the Rod Serling we know, but of the warm-hearted, loving father that
apparently he was. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Isn't that interesting?
Because for some reason I thought that he was one of those like impenetrable genius types, like the Peter Sellers type or the Johnny Carson type, where no one else gets in. Like they're just kind of locked in their own, you know, super private, especially in those days. Now everyone is open about everything, but in those days people were very like guarded, and you know, there was a wall of defense between.
Well, I don't know whether I agree with the proposition that people were more closed 20 years ago than they are today, in view of the fact we're talking earlier about the electronic communication. No, but there was a psychological reason for a lot of performers like Johnny Carson, who are closed off personally and professionally, right there, like your best friend.
Yeah.
And I knew he wasn't mine back then. maybe it's a conservation of energy. Maybe there's a basic shyness. I know Johnny was shy to a large extent. Serling, who knows what happened to him as a paratrooper, but that apparently with his family, he was open and unguarded. But if more people than I have said we didn't know him very well, that's the truth. I remember some of the stuff on the set. I remember this Czechoslovakian acrobat who was in a furry suit.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Right. And I remember dimly thinking, wait a minute. What's that about the Beatles? How could this Czechoslovakian acrobat in a furry suit be on the wing and have any reality whatsoever? But something happened in both the shows I did, and I don't fully understand it. Maybe you have a better understanding from being more objective than I. But some universal is plumbed in both the shows that I was in. One of a guy in a small town getting a fortune read, and the other a guy on an airplane with a little furry person on the wing staring at him. Something in the psyche of people watching is hit by those two shows, and the reason they remain popular.
Well, yeah, particularly in the 60s and the 70s, which, you know, like you're in the jet age. It's like all the 70s, I remember. Well, of course, it's where Airplane came from, all those airport tragedies. Airport 77, airport this, you know, like everything was, because it was so much a part of the fabric of culture of like, oh, this, we're in this era now where this is a thing that everyone experiences. So, you know, television does what television does very well, which is, what happened if that all went to shit? And then like 90 different ways of how that could go horribly wrong, and, you know, and to get into people's minds.
Yeah. I suppose you could look at movies and get a reading on the culture of the time, what was topical and what was new. And that certainly Jet said come in, I guess, in the 60s, by the 70s, those airplane movies began were funny. But, you know, what is funny? Funny comes back to funny. Whatever's funny, I suppose they say, no, we've just done that. That's funny, but we've just done Mad World.
Right.
So we won't do that. But 10 years later, they do something else that's similar. And every decade, the old jokes come back.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's true. It's that you always think, oh, we're so evolved with our humor now. But then you look at old stuff and you're like, oh, I'm just making the same jokes. Yeah, it's just it's all cyclical,
right,
you know,
right,
over and over again. Like all the stuff that Airplane and Airplane 2, you know, like that that humor went away for a while and then came back.
Exactly.
You know, sort of dry, really serious type of stuff.
Exactly.
What was the I'm kind of curious what the overall sense in the 60s were, where you guys were essentially breaking new ground with social interaction, social mores, and, you know, what was it? What did it mean to be a man then? Like, an adult. Like, what did it mean to be a grown up in that point? And what do you think it means now? And what have you learned in that time?
Well, what an interesting question. Well, I'm a child at heart.
Yes.
So I wish I knew what it meant to be a man. You know, to me, none of those things change. Those are iconic principles. That are involved. What is being a man? Well, you know, being powerful and hitting out with your fists and making war or being angry and striking out, that isn't a man in some terms. You know, it's such a complicated question. It requires balance. You have to protect your loved ones, whether that's your child, your wife, your brother, or your country. You have to do that to protect, so that you may get into a fight over an imagined insult to your wife. At the same time, you have to bear arms against the enemy of your country to protect freedom, so I would imagine. And that means being a man. At the same time, the word empathy comes to mind, and that to be a man is also to be empathetic about everything and everybody. Well, how do you beat somebody up if you're empathetic? It's antithetical.
Yeah.
So there is a balance there somewhere. And I often refer to an experience I had where I didn't know whether to stand on principle or to be political and make adjustments. So when do you stand on principle? When do you say this? This is as far as I go. I go no further. If you say, you can give as much money as you want to any political party, and the Supreme Court says yes. Where do you say, well, wait a minute? How do we keep money out of politics and let the value? Where does freedom begin and good sense? So it's always evolving. It's always changing. So being a man means being strong and being weak. And where that balance is, everybody has to find it for themselves. But it never changes.
Okay. I've been kind of wondering lately if it has something to do with, like you said, you know, not being a man or not being an adult is not punching people in the face and going to war. I think it's not whether or not you have strong emotions, but I think not giving in to every strong emotion is where.
But I could find a counter argument to that.
Damn it!
Well, why not? I mean, you're an emotional being. Why shouldn't you give in to your emotion? Doesn't mean that if you get angry, you're going to go get a gun and shoot somebody. But why shouldn't you display your anger? This makes me angry.
Yeah.
And the person says, well, why? Because it's unjust. What's unjust about it? Yeah, the right doesn't do what the left is saying. Well, let's see if we can fix that. Is the other person being a better man than you? Or are you commiserating and being empathetic and saying, wait a minute, you have a reasonable right to be angry about that. Yeah. Let's fix it.
I wonder if it has something to do with, what the cost of it is. In other words, are you giving into it selfishly? Does that create more damage than what you actually are trying to achieve?
Then therein lies the dilemma of standing on a principle or compromising.
Yeah.
When do you say, I'm not going any further, and you can't push me off this line, whereby the guy says, well, if you just take one step back, I'll forego any contretemps. And you say, okay. And then you have to make up your mind.
Yeah.
And then maybe you get blown out of the water for standing on principle and you get fired.
Yeah. Well, it must be. I mean, I don't know how you guys as a group,
being who?
The Star Trek community, okay. Like the original community.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that you guys referred to that.
That's what I.
You guys over,
you
over
guys,
20, over 50?
You so, guys.
Yeah.
It's weird that you didn't know in my head what I was picturing.
Right. You know, your type.
I know you're good. But, you know, essentially, that's like a band. And it seems to me to be like a band. So you have a group of people, but everyone has specific interests. So how do you keep coming back together over time and still manage and compromise and make sure that everyone's needs are being met?
That's interesting. Take the Eagles.
Yeah.
Okay. That'll be like a neutral territory, how they get back in. So I know Joe Walsh.
Okay.
So Joe and I have talked about it. In fact, Joe Walsh and I had this conversation. I said, I'm on tour again with this one-man show, Shatner's World, which, by the way...
April 24th?
April 24th at mm-hmm. Movie theaters.
Theater near you?
In the theater near you. Shatner's World Cinema.
.com.
For information about tickets and stuff like that. April 24th. Unique event. You're going to love it.
What did Joe Walsh say?
So I said to Joe Walsh, and we're having dinner, and I got to know Joe through his wife and my wife and his wife and all that kind of thing. So my musical ignorance, I didn't know the Eagles, okay? But I get to know Joe Walsh, who's a great guy. So I know Joe as a person, not as a musician. So I say, God, you know, the on tour is really tough, and for me, I mean, just getting to the venue is everything. The performance is nothing. It's how do you get to the next city? You got to get on an airplane. You get felt up by some, you know. You take your shoes off. You get a van. You get on an airplane. You wonder if you can make it. There's somebody sitting beside you with bad breath, and you get on and you get off the airplane. Where am I going to get? Where do I go? The hotel bed is too soft. My back is hurting. Yeah, by the time you get to the
Priceline.
Priceline.com. So I'm saying to Joe, getting to the venue is really tough, isn't it? And he says, yes. I said, so I have a guy or sometimes a woman who fronts it for him. It really takes a load off. What do you guys do? He said, we have these buses. I said, I know. We got a bus sometimes too. But no, he says, we have 17 buses.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wait a minute. You're one of those guys with 17 buses and a private airplane. They get on their private airplane, fly to the venue, spend a week or two or three at some place where they're put up in a great hotel. You know?
Wow.
Jeez. So his view of touring and my view of touring is two.
Yeah, it's really tough. You got to drive right up to the plane. Land you on top of the building in a helicopter.
Exactly.
But those guys, are they getting along currently?
Well, so getting along. So they had different views of what they wanted to do and departed. Now they are getting along.
Mm-hmm.
Or so we all think.
You know? Sure.
And why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? They're all older.
Mm-hmm.
The things that bothered them when they were young and not quite in their right mind.
I mean, they can see
no longer right. Now they can see reality.
Just
clear,
knock this
right?
mountain of coke out of the way so I can yell at you.
You're my friend.
Exactly right.
This used to be fun.
You're my friend. Why was that?
Right. Oh, I remember you.
Yeah.
Oh, you got something here.
Yeah. We all do.
We're never going to die, right? We're going to stay up all night.
It's makeup.
Yeah. Makeup.
My nose is shiny.
I'm always so interested in just the way that people evolve and how do you evolve together and maintain a relationship, not just with one other person, which can be challenging enough.
Well, that's bad enough, right.
But how do you do it with four, five,
well,
six
that's
people?
The problem. And everybody is evolving at a different rates in different different places. That goes for a marriage. You're all evolving. We're all changing. We have vastly changed since the beginning of this conversation.
Yes.
And that's just our conversation.
Yes, my girlfriend's going to tell me I should go sleep with the car instead. A lot has changed.
You found the key to your car. Now you have to find the key to your girlfriend.
Damn! It's out here somewhere.
It's the one with the dog on.
Oh.
Yes, so how to change... Not how to change without being separate.
Yeah.
How to change together.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge, huge part of marriage and a marriage of a group.
Yeah, and I would assume that a lot of it just comes down to compromise and being able to compromise.
Right. So then you got the band leader, and in the case of that band, saying, "I want my music."
Yeah.
And what do they say?
Go fuck yourself.
Then you don't get the hundreds of thousands of dollars. for, you know, you don't get your 17th van.
Yeah.
It's 16 vans.
I want 17.
Well, I then know. Do my music.
Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, I don't even know if... it seems like you can get into these situations where you're fighting for something and you're fighting for something and then you don't even remember what you're fighting about. You're just like, I'm just fighting now. I don't even know what I want.
Well, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's bad energy. That's you got to learn. That's a learned response.
Are you naturally a good leader or did you have to learn leadership skills?
I think you have to learn all those things. You start out when you're born, you start out thinking of you only.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually you learn, wait a minute, maybe I... Maybe the clan is better off with me being amenable.
Yeah.
But those are learned responses. And then depending on your DNA and your association, you learn more.
Does fatherhood change that?
I think so. I think fatherhood opens your eyes to many things. First of all, your own mortality, mm-hmm. which you're beginning to understand.
Yep.
And that'll condition you right away. Wait a minute. Maybe if I don't get excited about this... I'll last another 6 months.
Yeah.
And then you begin to think about things that you might not have thought of before for your child, like a better world.
Yeah. And so you start thinking in these macro terms of how to make a better world for your grandchild?
Well, at this point, I'm thinking of the legacy for my family. You mm-hmm. know, what am I leaving them? How am I leaving them? There's a terrible event coming up. And I don't mean April 24th.
No, that's the good one. That yeah.
No, in the years to come, the world is changing, and in enormous fashions. Drought and toxicity and terrible things are happening, and the world is aware, but the world is burying its head because it's too awful to contemplate. Mm-hmm. The things we have to do to try and stave off global warming, which is just a term for global toxicity, and that's huge. And I'll be dead before that time comes, but my grandchildren won't be, and that's a huge subject.
So, what do you do, or what can you do?
Well, it means giving up certain luxuries that we all think of, and what those are, I'm not quite sure. I wouldn't ask you to give up your car.
You can't take it away from me.
Not now. No. You work too hard. Of course you care. But well, you got to reward yourself with something.
Points.
And I'm taken. Can't give me away. I don't know the answers to all that. There are much more acquainted people than I who know what it is we have to do.
Yeah.
But we know we have to give up energy usage, and we have to clean the air, whatever's polluting the air and the ground and the water, we have to clean that up immediately. Because the ramifications from one thing lead to another. Global warming, the ice melt, the ice caps melt, the cold water changes the currents change the atmosphere, the rains move north. I mean, it's all so related.
Yeah.
And the other humiliating part of it is that in the years to come, when mankind dies out and other entities take their place, the Earth will return to what it is. Our brief appearance on Earth, we've been around 50,000 years. We're another few years, and then we're gone.
Yeah.
Life will luxuriate, promulgate the way it's supposed to. Every niche will be filled, and the niche that we occupied as destroyers will be occupied by somebody else.
Yeah. Or if not, then you could go back in time and deliver two whales into the San Francisco Bay by slingshotting around the sun.
Right. Would it were that easy? You know? And whales and elephants, those massive, marvelous animals, are particularly, I'm particularly fond of, although all animals and all things alive are dear. But those animals that I have sensibilities, we know. What are we doing to them? And all those questions.
I know. Well, the problem, I think a large part of the problem is that, you know, it's like there's so many people are just moving in one direction. It's such a big entity. How do you turn it?
Exactly.
It's like turning a battleship.
Well, and look at us. We're sitting here in this most marvelous country saying, oh, we're not going to, we're the haves. And then there's this large, huge, enormous number of have-nots who say, wait a minute, you had your turn. We want some.
Yeah.
And therein lies the problem, one of the problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you want me to give my car to...
Right. Oh, I'm a have-not.
So it's massive. It's massive, and there's no simple answer, and I don't know the answers, but it's out there.
So just as we're wrapping up, a couple quick... maybe not so quick, but what is it that gets you excited to get out of bed every day? And is it work, or is it creating, or is it your family? Or like, what is the thing...
All of it. I am in the position in my life, this enviable position in my life where I'm healthy, I'm of an age where I know I'm going to die soon, You know, soon may 50 years.
Sure.
Sooner than that, and I know I know my mortality, and I know how precious every moment is. I know, and I'm healthy enough. That's the lucky part. I'm healthy enough to say I want to eat it all. I want to absorb it all. I want to take it all in. I'm riding horses in competition and winning.
Oh shit!
Oh yeah. And that too, a good shit.
My dad always said that too. My dad always said,
"Don't disparage a good shit."
My dad said that to me a couple years ago. He was like, "Yeah." I mean, I was stressing about something. I actually wrote about it in my stand-up. I was stressing about something. I'm like, "Oh, I have to do this and this and this, and I just don't know, and I don't know if I'm doing well." And he goes, "I'll tell you, buddy. Any day you can take a shit's a good day." And I'm like,
"And that was a couple of years ago. He hasn't had a shit in 2 years." Tell your dad, drink a lot of water.
But just that idea that you know, those are the things that you take for granted now, but as you start to get older, like, no, this is good.
Right. But all that's part of your body, and you begin to appreciate your body. I work out. I feel the muscles in my body. My God, I've still got the muscles. I still can contract it and build the muscle and still do I was getting a doctor's, yearly visit this morning. And I'm waiting for him, so I'm on the table, and I'm doing crunches. And he comes in. He says, "You're doing crunches?" Yeah, because I can feel the ab muscles working, and I'm working the muscles. And the fact that I'm not dribbling out of my mouth right now, and I've got all my sensibilities, is I'm totally conscious of it. So that's what gets me out in the morning.
Yeah, and exercise is really, 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 really important.
Got to keep it going.
Do you have a special? Do you eat well, or do you everything in moderation?
I try to. Yeah, I know I'm conscious of what I should be eating. I frequently don't do that, but I'm conscious that I should do it.
Sure.
You know, I'm there, but I'm aware to a large extent, not to the ultimate extent, but I'm aware of what I'm doing, what I'm saying, what this means to me. Four of us. How many am I? We're five. How much numbers mean to me?
Yeah. How much I hate the number five. I think the four of us can appreciate that. Yes.
The 4 plus 1, the 6 minus 1. Either way you want to put it.
But you know, because there are young old people and old young people.
I love
like
that.
My dad's father was one of these. He's a house painter, and then when he retired, like the day the way that it was relayed to me is that like the day my grandfather retired, it was like pajamas at 4 p.m. And then that was it.
And he died.
He lived a long time, but he was just always like from the time he was in his mid to late 50s, he was just an old guy and not like he just didn't really. Well, he liked to go to the racetrack, but that was about it.
You know, I just had my house painted.
Yeah,
and. You know, it's not one of the great jobs in the world. You're rolling paint. No, but I'm about to make a point. It's not one of the most challenging jobs. But on the other hand, when that house was finished, it looked beautiful.
Sure.
It looks beautiful. There's a sense of accomplishment. You finish painting that house, you've got, wow, look at that. I filled the cracks. I did the thing. I got and that house looks new.
Yeah.
There's a sense of accomplishment.
Well, it
why did he stop?
Loves pajamas.
He was an asshole. Yeah. No, I think he just because he hated his job and he
lost the sense of accomplishment.
Yeah, I don't think he ever. He was of an era of that. You worked I shouldn't say an era. He came from a mindset that was. Your job isn't necessarily something you have to love. You just do it to put food on the table. You work 9 to 5,
Once you get the pension.
Ignore your kids, basically, which is what he did. Go to the racetrack. He didn't really have a lot of joy. His one joy in life was going to the racetrack, and it had nothing to do with his family or his job. And
what
I think,
did he do at the racetrack? He bet
the horses? Yeah, he just bet. Yeah.
So the thrill of betting the horses. Well, it had to be.
Yeah.
I mean, winless, oh God.
Yeah.
He's feeling something.
Yeah, he wasn't feeling anything painting houses. Yeah. But as soon as he didn't have to paint houses anymore, he did not paint houses anymore, and he just lived the rest of his life like an old person.
By that you mean he wasted the rest of his life?
Well, actually, I shouldn't say wasted because maybe he enjoyed it, but I just mean...
Well, maybe.
I can't imagine going, I don't have to do anything now, and doing nothing all day, and being in pajamas by 4, and just sitting in a recliner for 40 years. Like, that to me sounds fucking terrible. Sounds terrible.
Except that if you had to climb ladders all your life, and your legs hurt, and you still had to do it, and you had to raise your arms, which now are arthritic, and you got to, you know, pull down, so you're on a ladder, and you're making up and down motions, and you get off, and you're covered in paint, and it's the smell of the paint in your nose, and you finally get home, and your kids sort of think, oh, here comes Dad, I can smell him. You know? So he goes to the racetrack and gets a thrill,
yeah,
which he doesn't have. He's in the sun. I mean, the guy's painting my house painted it white, in the hot sun of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I mean, wow. And I'm looking at the hot, the white building, and I'm squinting my eyes because it's so bright.
Yeah.
They've got to be there for days while they're painting. So your granddad was, you know, what was his thrill? It was going to the horses and seeing if his knowledge... Did he make money at handicapping?
He would make money and then spend it. I mean, he would give it right back. Well, I mean, he was always on the, you know.
It was on the
edge. It was a never-ending process.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But at least he stayed with it.
He did.
I mean, he didn't lose
it
enough to not to go anymore.
No. Yeah, he's. I think in the last
part of it.
In the last maybe like 10 years of his life, he kind of gave it up. But
he even gave that up.
I think he even gave that up.
Oh, wow. I'm so sorry.
How dare you give an excellent counterpoint to my argument about my grandfather? How dare you make... Yeah, but you're good at that, though. You like... I feel like that's a good trait to have, is someone saying, this thing is this way, and then going, it could be. Or is it maybe because of these other reasons,
well,
too?
And that's the beauty, isn't it? Because nothing is ever... black and white, except my house.
Now it is, yeah, because
right.
It's brand new.
Right.
Yeah, that is a really that's a really. I think the exercise is the physical way to stay young your whole life, but also I think as we wrap
exercise
out,
exercise your mind,
exercise yeah. your mind by not being afraid to welcome and discover new things,
and that is what the one man show is about. My one-man show, if you were asked me to give you a log line on the one-man show, is say yes to life. And that one-man, which, by the way, April 24th.
Shatner's World?
Shatner's World. ShatnersWorldCinema.com to find out how to buy tickets. At a movie theater near you. It's an event.
Yeah.
It's a unique event. You guys are going to love it.
Even if it's okay. Not near you, you should go.
If you have to drive in your car.
It's fine.
You'll give them a lift in your car.
A lift. Disclaimer, I will not give you a lift in my car. But so the ability to discover new things, and also the
say
ability,
yes to life.
Saying yes to life, and the ability to be open-minded, to not just be so rigid in your perspective that you can't go, well, I feel this way, but this other one.
On the
empathy.
Other hand.
Yeah, on the other yeah. hand. It's a great way to... On the other hand, I think, is the name of the podcast that you should start doing. Where people come in with a very rigid idea, and your goal is to essentially...
What an interesting idea.
And your goal is to try
concept.
To change their minds.
That's a great concept.
Right?
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful concept.
All right. We'll pitch it. Let's do it. And then if you're like, on the other hand, I don't feel like doing that.
Let's go on that.
With this guy.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. William Shatner, absolute pleasure. Wonderful to talk to you. And it's been fun seeing you on Twitter. And then also, you guys are doing the Gishwis, the scavenger hunt, right? The big scavenger. You're making a team.
I'm doing something. Yeah.
Yes, you're doing a big scavenger team. Shatner's World, April 24th. ShatnersWorldCinema.com. And go see it. And really great to see you.
Thank you.
And we end the show by saying enjoy your burrito, which is a phrase that tells people to enjoy their present as it's happening. Would you say that, please? Because you have a great, great voice.
Enjoy your burrito.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Delightful.
The end.
Oh. Awesome. Thank you so much. That was great.
That was great.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.